All right. Well, you know what I'm going to say. Let's do it. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. This one is one of those that is still at the heart of the Torah, and in fact is one of the places where we start to see a number of things really come into clarity. As a matter of fact, I'll say up front, when it comes to paganism and idolatry and recognizing why the whore church is still in exile and why that term is apropos and why the two whoring wives that are referred to in Ezekiel 23 and Jeremiah 3 have become literally the whore church and the whore synagogue, their descendants. This is a great one that really kind of lays it out and makes so much clear. And the more we reread this every year we go through this, the more I think that is undeniable. And it starts like this. So I started to say, turn with me, if you will. Here we go. Chapter 11 of the book of Deuteronomy, or Devarim, verse 26, and it says, behold, okay, behold, re'eh is the Hebrew word there, re'eh, check it out, look here, see, behold, I set before you this day, hayom, a blessing and a curse. A blessing and a curse. The blessing, im, nope, it's not im. That's what's interesting. It's not the word if here. It is the, and that would normally be what you would see, if then. But in this case, and Rashi makes a big deal, I think it's an important distinction. I usually make sure I at least emphasize it a bit. The blessing that you shall hearken. The blessing that you shall hearken under the commandments of Yehoiarah, which I command you to this day. In other words, it's on condition, but it's up front. So the way I like to think about this, you've probably heard me use this example many times. It's like saying, if I was going to have somebody fix my car, and I say, I give you $500 if you will fix my car. Well, you know what that means. You fix the car, and then when the car is fixed, I look at it, and then you get the $500. But how about if I said, I'll give you $500 that you will fix my car? The difference is you're going to get the $500 up front. And I expect you to fix the car, but I'm trusting you to do that. So you get the $500 up front that you fix the car. That is exactly what this is set up to show, and that's why it's so important. This is a blessing that comes first. He is willing to trust us. The curse is im if you do not obey. And that is the big difference. So, the blessing, if you shall hearken unto the commandments of Yehoiarah, which I command you this day, and the curse, im, this time, if, no, you lo, hearken to the commandments of Yehoiarah, but turn aside instead out of the way which I command you to go after other gods which you have not known. And that is the theme that's going to run throughout this, this idea of other gods and how he doesn't just hate them, folks. He expects us to do likewise, and it is vitally important that we understand that. We're going to see that probably emphasized here like few other places in Scripture. And it shall come to pass when Yehoiarah brings you into the land that you're going in to possess, you shall set the blessing upon Mount Gerizim and the curse upon Mount Ebal. Now, we see this more than once as well. The curse is going to be on one mountain, the blessing on the other, to make it clear that they're separate. And they're not beyond the Jordan, behind the way of the going down of the sun, in the land of the Canaanites that dwell in the Arabah over against Gilgal beside the terebinths of Moreh. So, are they over there? Yeah. For you are to pass over the Jordan, to go and possess the land which Yehoiarah has given you, and indeed he says you shall possess it and dwell therein. And you shall observe to do, and what is the root word there? Shamar, right? Now this is the Shamar Tem, this is the Y'all form. Y'all shall hearken to do all the statutes and the ordinances which I set before you this day. Chapter 12 says these are Ha-Hukim, the statutes, and Ha-Mishpatim, the ordinances, which you shall observe to do in the land which Yahuwah, El of your fathers, has given you to possess it, all the days that you live upon the earth. And this one, too, is interesting. Not only do we get the idea that he hates these idols, but what we are to do is expressed here so poignantly. Now, I usually note this, but especially in this particular set of verses 2, 3, and 4, there is something that once you see it, folks, it should leap off the page at you. It says in the English, not just read it for a second, and then we'll go back and get it right. You shall surely, utterly destroy all the places wherein the nations that you're fixing to dispossess serve their gods, upon the high mountains, upon the hills, under every leafy green tree. And now listen to this. And I'm going to use the notice here that in Hebrew there's a conjugation. You know, we have different forms of conjugation, right? You can make things future tense and past perfect tense and future perfect. And in this case, Hebrew has a conjugation which is kind of interesting. It's called peel. And it literally means kind of like the emphatic conjugation. So it's not just you're to break things down, okay? You're not just to burn things. You are to utterly smash the living hell out of them. Okay, that is the peel conjugation. So when he says you can break them, or if it's in peel, it literally utterly destroy all these places. So here we go. You shall break down, smash into smithereens their pillars, break down their altars, burn their asherim with fire. You shall hew down the graven images of their gods, and you shall destroy their name out of that place. So, to kind of make the point here, peel includes things like exterminate, blot out, utterly do away with, smash them to smithereens so that there ain't nothing left. You shall not do, he says, so unto Yahuwah Yireh. He despises these things, these places, these asherim, these Easter eggs and bunnies and trees and all this crap which is associated with pagan fake gods. And he doesn't just hate it, folks. He wants it destroyed, their very name blotted out of that place. I guess I will ask the question, do you think then he's fond of the idea of taking the most important day and act in all of human history, the birth, the desert, the death, the sacrifice, the resurrection on the completed work there, and renaming it after a pagan goddess, when in fact that name was supposed to be blotted out and the bunnies and eggs were destroyed? You shall not do so unto Yahuwah Yireh, but unto the place which Yahuwah Yireh shall choose out of all your tribes to put his name there. Funny, we don't even know his name. How would people know whether it was put someplace or not? Even unto his habitation you shall seek, and there you shall come. Thither or there you shall bring your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes, your offerings of your hand, your vows, your freewill offerings, the firstlings of your herd and your flock, and there you shall eat before Yahuwah Yireh. There you shall rejoice. Now that word, simcha, rejoice, samach, hag samach, we've heard this root word before, shin mem chet, and it has this idea of joyfulness. That's going to appear a number of places, especially when we talk about some of the feasts that are also in this portion. You will go to this place and rejoice in all that you put your hands to, you and your households, wherein Yahuwah Yireh has blessed you. And you are not to do, after all that we do here this day, every man doing whatsoever is right in his own eyes. For you're not as yet come to the rest and to the inheritance which Yahuwah Yireh is giving you. And I guess that's interesting, because here we are, having been kicked out for cause, kind of back in that mode. Now, when you go over the Jordan and dwell in the land which Yahuwah Yireh causes you to inherit, and he gives you rest from all your enemies round about, so that you dwell in safety, then, he says, it shall come to pass that the place which Yahuwah Yireh shall choose to cause his name to dwell there. So let's pause. This place does not exist anymore. Understand that. We have been kicked out of the land for cause. The temple was destroyed for cause, and his name no longer dwells in that land. So the things that we're going to see that are described here, we cannot do. Don't sweat it. He knows that we can't do them, but I believe that there are things we can learn by reading what he says. So his name is not now placed at these places, but it's that place that when he put it there was where you were to bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings, sacrifices, tithes, offering of your hand, choice vows which you make unto Yahuwah. And you shall, here it is again, rejoice before Yahuwah Yireh, you, your sons, your daughters, your manservants, your maidservants, the Levites within your gates, for as much as the Levite, remember, doesn't have any portion or inheritance with you. So take heed to yourself that you do not offer your burnt offerings in every place that you see, only in those certain places, in the place which Yahuwah shall choose in one of your tribes. So out of the 12 tribes, one of these places he will choose to put his name. There you shall offer your burnt offerings. There you shall do all that I command you. Notwithstanding, you can kill and eat flesh within all your gates, after the desire of your soul, your nephesh, according to the blessing of Yehuyarel, which he's given you. The clean and the unclean alike may eat of it, as of the gazelle and as of the hart. So, H-A-R-T, right? These are deer-like animals, and they're clean. Only you shall not eat the blood. He noticeably says this a number of times. Do not eat the blood. Life is in the blood. We know this, but I think it bears emphasis. And indeed, that's exactly what he does, emphasizes it. You're pouring it out. You're going to pour it out upon the earth as if it was water. You may not eat within your gates the tithe of your corn, of your wine, or your oil, or your firstlings of your herd or your flock, nor of any of the vows which you vow, nor your free will offerings or the offering of your hand. But you shall eat them before Yahuwah, your El, in the place which Yahuwah, your El, shall choose. You and your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, and the Levite within your gates. Here it is again. And you shall rejoice before Yahuwah, your El, in all that you put your hand to. Take heed to yourself that you do not forsake the Levite as long as you live upon the land. Again, exile for cause. When Yehuyarel shall enlarge your borders, as he's promised you, and then you say something like, well, I'll eat flesh because your soul desires to eat flesh, you can eat it. You can eat flesh after all the desire of your soul. If the place which Yehuyarel shall choose to put his name there in the land, when it happens, if it's too far away from you, well, then you shall kill of your herd and of your flock which Yehuyah has given you, as I have commanded you, and you shall eat within your gates after all the desire of your soul. Now, there's an interesting Rashi note on this one. I mention this in fairness because, as a general rule, I am not a big fan of the oral tradition, oral Torah. And certainly there's a lot of stuff in there that I think is probably of value. And what I was fixing to say, there's a whole lot of stuff that's just clear hooey as well. So I am not a believer in the traditions of the elders. Yeshua obviously was not either. We've talked about that many, many times. He makes that very clear. By your traditions, you made the commandments of Yah of no effect. But there is an interesting Rashi comment, which, in fairness, like I said, I do need to mention here. He picks on this word, in the place which Yahuwah is going to do, you're going to kill of your herd, and it says, comma, comma's not in the original, of course, says, as I have commanded you. As I have commanded you. And you'll eat within your gates. Now, the Rashi comment is essentially, hey, look, this supports the oral Torah because we don't see a place where this commandment is in Scripture. In other words, is there a process, a procedure for doing this? And they're going to say, well, this is one of those places where he references the oral tradition. How do you make a kosher kill and a kosher sacrifice? As you know, there are some rules that are associated with that. And I don't have a problem with the rules to the extent that, given the tools that they had, and the fact that the desire is to get the blood out, the process is probably the most humane way to dispatch a goat or a bull that there is. And they say that the animal loses consciousness and is not horribly conscious of the pain. I guess dying is not something that you want to look forward to regardless, but the heart does pump the blood out. So the claim that it's as I have commanded you is at least interesting. We'll leave it at that. All right. Howbeit, he says, as the gazelle and as the heart is eaten, so you shall eat thereof. The unclean and the clean alike may eat. Only, just be steadfast and don't eat the blood. Do not eat the blood. The blood is the life. We know this. Life's in the blood. And you shall not eat the life with the flesh. Second time in this portion alone that he has made that point. Do not eat the blood. Wait a minute. There's one more. You shall not eat it. You shall pour it out upon the earth as water. Is it clear? Don't eat the blood. Oh, wait a second. Just in case it's not, he says it one more time. Do you get the idea this is important? You shall not eat it, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, when you shall do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. Only thy holy things which you have, and your vows which you take, and you go into the place which Yahuwah shall choose, and there you shall offer your burnt offerings, the flesh and the blood, upon the altar of Yehuyarel, and the blood of your sacrifices shall be poured out against the altar of Yehuyarel, and you shall eat the flesh. Observe and hear all of these words which I command you, that it may go well with you and with your children after you forever, when you do that which is good and right in the eyes of Yahuwah. This, too, is being emphasized. Don't do that which is right in your own eyes. By the way, that phrase appears multiple times. It shows up in Joshua and other places as well. It's not a good thing, by the way. Do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. When Yahuwah shall cut off the nations from before you that you're going in to dispossess them, and you do that, you dispossess them, and you dwell on their land, take heed to yourself that you are not ensnared to follow them. Now, this is another one of these very important commands. I have it highlighted. I encourage you in your Bible, highlight this, emphasize it, understand it. Do not do what they do. It says, after they're destroyed from before you, you are not to inquire after their gods and say something like this. Hey, how is it these nations used to serve their gods? Even so, I'll do likewise. What are them bunnies and eggs about? Did they have Christmas trees? Did they have Yule logs? Did they have all kinds of wonderful pagan crap that they did? That sounds really great. We'll Christianize it, and we'll claim that that somehow is acceptable, because he knows our hearts. He loves that crap. No, folks, he doesn't. Take heed that you're not snared by following after them, and don't even think about asking after those gods and saying, how did these nations serve their gods? I'll do likewise. No, don't. You shall not do so unto Yahuwah. You know, and here he's going to give another example. Because every abomination to Yahuwah which he hates, they do. They have done unto their gods. Even their sons and daughters, they burn in the fire to their gods. You know what they do? Hell, they have vans set up at the head of the DNC, and they have little pagan sacrifices right there on the streets of Chicago. Killing babies right there to their gods. Lest anybody doubt about it. Come on and get your free baby killing done here. Folks, the point here, I can't imagine that it's anything except obvious. How do these nations do it? How much pagan crap do we have? Answer. We got it all. We got the same stuff, and we're doing just as bad, and it's a sacrament now. Abortion has become a sacrament. Paid for, subsidized by your tax dollars at work, and they don't even care. The baby's already come out. They'll cut their little bodies up. Hey, there's money to be made by selling little organs and little feet and legs and heads. Every bunch of crap that they can do, they are doing. Every abomination to Yahuwah, which he hates, they have done, they did do, and guess what? They are doing it right now. Your tax dollars at work. Chapter 13 is a repetition. And by the way, this is an interesting verse. It is the end of chapter 12 in some of the English Bibles. And so it'd be like verse 12:32. And a lot of the Hebrew Bibles, it's the first verse in chapter 13. So the key is, it's at the end of 12 or the beginning of 13. And wherever it is, it's the second time we've seen it. It's important. Do not miss it. All kol is the word there. The word which I command you, that you shall observe to do. You shall not add to it, nor subtract from it, nor diminish from it. All that I command you, you shall do. And this is one of those things, and it kind of rubs me the wrong way. I hear crap from the whore church. And they basically say, oh, he can't keep his mind. You know, you can't trust him. He'll change his mind all the time. You know, he did away with the law, nailed it to the cross. That is, folks, one of the biggest lies in all of human history. Right up there with, you can be like God, you will not die. It's right up there with, he can't be trusted to take his word seriously. He says, don't add to it. Now, people will say, well, see, he does it. That's not the commandment here. The fact is, he doesn't do it. He's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And he told us in his very first public address in Matthew 5:17-19, he was not going to. By the way, that is explained in this portion too as to why he needed to say that, so that we would know he is who he says he is. But on the other hand, ask yourself the question. If his word changes and he can't be trusted to keep his word, why the hell would you think that his death on the cross matters? He can't be trusted to keep his word, can he? What difference does it make? Your faith is worthless. It's worthless. If you can't trust the God of the Bible to be the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and to neither add to nor subtract from his word, when he says, as long as heaven and earth exist, he wasn't gonna. It irritates the hell out of me to have people calling him a liar. But just as bad is when the whore church says, well, we're going to do what he prohibits. We're going to add to and subtract from. We don't like Sabbath. We don't like his Moedim. We like bunnies and eggs and Christmas trees. We like Easter better. We like naming it after a pagan goddess better. We like our trees. We like our pagan crap. We like our pork cutlets and our bacon. We don't care about what he says is food. We don't. Matter of fact, we don't like what he says is money. We don't like much about this God. Why are we even bothering to follow him? Don't add to it, subtract from it. It's not that hard. The Pharisees, of course, they were called hypocrites because that's exactly what they did. And remember what Yeshua said? By the way, it's in here twice. He called them out in Mark chapter 7 and in Matthew chapter 23 and other places. Called them hypocrites, sons of vipers, and so forth. But in Mark especially, he said, by your traditions, these things that you call law, in other words, nomos, by your traditions, you've made the commandments of God of no effect. For shame. Don't do what's right in your own eyes. That's part of the point. All right, chapter 13, though, the rest of the chapter is fascinating because it is going to lay out exactly why it is that there's a difference, I will contend, between a pagan Jesus who allegedly did away with his own law and therefore can't be trusted for anything, and the real Son of Elohim, the Torah made flesh, who is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, who is the author of Scripture, and did not change not so much as one yod or tittle from his own word. And by the way, had he done so, he would have run afoul of this chapter and this example and been deserving of death, not a suitable sacrifice to save us from it. It could not be more important, folks, what we are getting ready to talk about. So you're looking for a place in Scripture to say, hey, here is why a lot of the so-called Jews that reject a Jesus who did away with the law, well, they're on solid ground. Because if Jesus did away with the law, they would know, and we should know, that he's a liar and the truth is not in him. On the other hand, if the Son of Yah, whose name is the salvation of Yah, and that's his job description, since he didn't do away with the Torah, read what Deuteronomy 13 says we understand about that. It goes like this. If there arises in the midst of you a prophet, so-called or real, or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or a wonder, and that sign or a wonder comes to pass, something that he spoke to you saying, hey, let's go after other gods, gods which you've not known. Let us serve them. Now, he just said something and it came to pass. Does that make him a real prophet? There are other places where it says if he says something that doesn't come to pass, he ain't a real prophet. But this looks like maybe he is. How do we know? Well, this is also telling you, if he's telling you to do something contrary to the book, to Torah, if he says, let's go after other gods which you've not known, like let's have bunnies and eggs, let's celebrate Easter and Christmas, Mithra's birthday, let's not go after the... He's a liar and the truth is not... Well, what does it say? It's kind of blunt here. As a matter of fact, it's downright, well, scary, I would think. You shall not hearken to the words of that so-called prophet or that dreamer of dreams, because Yahuwah your El is testing you. He's putting you to the test, to the proof, to see whether or not you love Yahuwah Yireh with all your heart and with all your soul, like you're supposed to, Shema Israel. After Yahuwah Yireh shall you walk. After him you shall walk. And after him you shall fear. And his commandments you shall keep. And unto his voice you shall shamar hearken. And unto him you shall serve. And unto him you shall cleave. You get the picture? Don't go with the fake. Stick with him. Follow him, fear him, keep his commandments, follow his voice, serve him, cleave unto him. Now, as for that prophet or dreamer of dreams, he shall be put to death because he has spoken perversion against Yahuwah Yireh. Huh? Just a little bit of bunnies and eggs and renaming the most important day in human history after a fake goddess? And celebrating it with, you know, sacrifices of children? A little thing like that? That is such a big deal that he wants us to kill the prophet that's telling us to worship that fake Jesus? Oops. That prophet or that dreamer of dreams shall be put to death because he has spoken perversion against Yahuwah Yireh, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. who redeemed you out of the house of bondage, to draw you aside out of the way which Yehuyarel commanded you to walk in. So, you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. Well, you know what? I got to tell you, that sounds to me fairly definitive. Sounds to me like he really has a problem with this idea of going after another Jesus, as Paul put it, whom we've not preached, who basically includes a lot of paganism and essentially says you can change those holy days and get rid of the God of the Bible and what he says. Don't cleave after him. Don't follow his voice. No, hell, we got a new Jesus here now. He emphasizes it, though. We're not done yet. Listen to this. He says, if it's your brother even, the son of your mother, or your son, or your own son, or your own daughter, or the wife of your bosom, in other words, somebody you really love, or the friend that's kind of like your own soul. Okay? Remember King David? That kind of a friend. Jonathan? It's a friend just like you. He's kind of like a part of your own soul. But if he comes to you secretly and he entices you and he says, let's go serve other gods. Let's serve another Jesus whom Paul didn't preach. Maybe Paul did preach him and we just, we got to read the Greek properly and see that's what... If he comes secretly and says, or maybe nowadays it'd be openly and he's got his 501c3 tax deduction and maybe he's got a mega church even. Let's go serve other gods, which you've not known, nor you nor your fathers. Now, in our case, since it's been a long time, it may be your fathers were worshiping these pagan gods too. But back in the days when this was being written and we weren't supposed to do this, it was pretty clear. 1,000 years of paganism, that has an effect. Okay, if he's telling you worship the gods of the peoples that are round about you, nigh unto you, or maybe they're far off from you, from one end of the earth even to the other end of the earth. Doesn't matter where they are. You shall not consent to him. You shall not hearken to him, nor shall your eye pity him, nor shall you spare him, nor shall you, conceal him. Wait a minute, this is your friend? This is somebody that's really close to you? You shall surely kill him. Your hand shall be first upon him to put him to death. Afterwards, the hand of all the people. Let me ask, do you think he doesn't like this idea? Do you think the creator of the universe is trying to tell you, this is serious crap, folks? He despises it. We just finished telling you, burn down their Asherim, destroy their altars and the pillars. Now he's telling you, somebody comes secretly and tells you, let's get them bunnies and eggs, and let's get that Christmas tree, and let's do all this good stuff, and let's change his Moedim, and let's go after another Jesus. You shall surely kill him. Afterwards, you shall stone him with stones that he dies, because he has sought to draw you away from Yehuyarel, from the one true Elohim, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. This sounds kind of definitive, and it says, Kol Israel, all Israel shall hear and fear, and do no more any such wickedness as this in the midst of you. Oh, well, wait a minute. See, we're off the hook, right? Because we did this. We allowed this crap. That's why we're in bondage. Hell, that's why the whore church is still out here in exile. I guess it doesn't matter anymore. Maybe he doesn't care anymore. Well, let's just finish reading and see what it says. If you hear tell concerning one of your cities, remember the cities that we got kicked out of, which Yehuyarel gave you, it's at this point their future tense, now it's past tense, to dwell in. And you hear something to the effect of certain sons of Belial. Bel is Baal. In other words, some fake lords, sons of Belial. Some renderings, this one says, certain base fellows. No, these are scumbags, folks. These are worshipers of the adversary. They've gone out from the midst of you. They've drawn away the inhabitants of their city, saying, same thing. Let's go serve these other gods, which you've not known. Well, then you're supposed to do some diligence here. Due diligence. Inquire. Make search. Ask diligently. Behold, see whether or not it is true. Washington? Is it true they're worshiping crap in the swamp there? See if it's true. And behold, if it is made certain that such abomination is, in fact, being wrought in the midst of you, then you shall surely smite the inhabitants of that city with Lefi Cherev. There's that word again. The mouth of the sword. The sword will devour much blood. Life is in the blood. Devour that city. Smite it with the edge, the mouth of the sword, destroying it utterly. Everything that's in it, and all the cattle thereof, with Lefi Cherev. And furthermore, does he want you to make sure you get the goodies that are there? The bunnies and the eggs and the extra gold and silver that was on the trees? Nope. Gather all of the spoil of it into the midst of the broad place thereof, and burn it with fire in the city, and the city, and all the spoil, with every whit of it, unto Yehoyarel. It shall be a heap forever. It shall not be built again. See, here's the thing, and this is why I emphasize this. I don't think most people have ever read this. I think most people, they think the bunnies and their eggs are harmless, and you'll hear crap like, oh, it's not pagan. God doesn't really care. He doesn't care about having the most important day in human history renamed after Ishtar, the fertility goddess, celebrated with dying eggs red in the blood of children. He doesn't mind that. He knows my heart. Oh, yeah, it's desperately wicked. But he does care, and he does hate it. And he just finished saying everything that's in the city needs to be burned, and furthermore, that city shall be a heap forever. It shall not be built again. Let me ask it one more time. Do you think he finds this distasteful? No. He finds it detestable, hateful, abomination, and he wants it gone. D-E-A-D, dead, gone, burned, buried, gone. But we're not done. A couple more verses in the chapter. And there shall cleave nothing of the devoted thing to your hand. A devoted thing is a thing that is devoted to some fake god. Now, there's other things, folks, that we have that are devoted to fake gods. We're going to have fake AI gods, and we got all kinds of fake gods. We've got great god Fauci and the medicine gods and a lot of other pagan crap. But if you just simply look at all the paganism that's in society and see how perversive it is, How perversive, that's another word. Pervasive, but it is perverse and perversive at the same time. Pervasively perversive. It's devoted. It's devoted to fake gods. What does he say? Don't even let it cling to your hand. So that Yahuwah may turn from the fierceness of his anger and show you mercy and compassion upon you and your sons as he has sworn to your fathers. Let me say it again. What's interesting to me is we are in exile. The whore church. Now you know why I call it the whore church. He hates this crap. He despises it with a passion and a vengeance that is literally unto death. And we wonder why the whore church is still in exile. He may turn from the fierceness of his anger. How long does it take him to turn from the fierceness of his anger? He's hidden his face. Here we are, centuries later, and the whore church is still doing the whoring, and they are still worshiping the bunnies and the egg. You go to Rome and look and see what's going on in Vatican City and all the pagan gods and all the crap that's in that place. What a hellhole! What a satanic hold of evil! Look at the Capitol Rotunda in Washington. Look at the paganism. It is beyond stifling how much crap. How much the pentagram, the layout of the city. Unbelievable. And then we wonder why it is we're told to come out. Why it is that this chapter is so important to our understanding so that he might turn from the fierceness of his anger. We're still in exile. We have not yet done what it is that he's telling us to take to heart. He hates this stuff. So that he might turn from the fierceness of anger and show us mercy and have compassion upon us and multiply us as he has sworn unto our fathers. This, folks, is a promise we can count on. Listen to the last verse in the chapter. When you shall hearken to the voice of Yehoyarel to keep all of his commandments, which I command you this day, to do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. Yehoyarel, do you see how bright, how blunt, how undeniable the contrast is? If not, let's read into 14. You, he says, are the children of Yehoyarel. Don't do the kind of things that are being taught in the grade schools. Don't do the kind of things that high school kids are now doing, literally, legion. You shall not cut yourselves, nor make baldness between your eyes for the dead. You are set apart, holy people, unto Yehuyarel, and Yahuwah has chosen you to be his own treasure out of all the peoples that are upon the face of the earth. Now let me pause for a second, because I read this first many years ago, and I thought, cut yourselves? Why would anybody cut themselves? And now if you're familiar with what's going on in the high schools and the grade schools, if you see what kids are doing, if you see that cutting, as it's called, is literally an epidemic, that there are kids that are cutting themselves and cutting themselves, and it's almost like there's something satanic going on here, and it's manifested in little kids that are being brought up to be servants of Satan, that they do exactly what it is. It's not instinctively, I guarantee you, it's pervasive, though, and somehow or other it manifests itself in the cutting. There's a message there. I refer to it as a culture of death. That's what it is. That is a culture that literally worships death. We're seeing that. You are supposed to be a holy people unto Yehuyarel, and Yahuwah has chosen you to be his own people. You shall not eat any abominable thing. What, you mean not even at the church potluck afterwards? On Sun God Day there? When we get our little pigs and we have our Ishtar Sun God Day ham? Not even then? Oh, you know my heart! You shall not eat any abominable thing. Huh. That seems pretty clear. You know what, folks? What he's going to describe in this next part of the chapter here is what is food and what is not food. And it's not that hard. Everybody that's been through this once if you go through the Torah, you'll see it exactly twice in great detail. This is the second time in the Torah that we're going to see it. But I'm going to go through it and make sure that we understand it because it's not that hard. But it is important, or he wouldn't keep repeating it, and he wouldn't tell us so clearly, don't eat any abominable thing. They got TV shows, pagan crap devoted to, let's go out and eat leeches and bugs and crap and give people prizes for it. These are the beasts which you might eat, things that are food as opposed to not food, the ox, the sheep, and the goat. The hart, the gazelle, the roebuck, the wild goat, the pygarg, and the antelope, and the mountain sheep. So basically, a lot of clean animals, we would say in this part of the country, antelope and other kinds of deer and hart and gazelles. Every beast, all of these animals that have a cloven hoof, that part the hoof, that have the hoof wholly cloven in two. If you've ever seen a goat, got goats, I can go out and look at them. And they got a split hoof, two actually separate little hooves. And they chew the cud. Among all the beasts that you can eat, you got to have both. The logic is simple. It's undeniable. It is not enough to have one and not the other. You got to have both. Nevertheless, these you shall not eat of them that do only one of those two things, that just, for example, only chew the cud, or of those that have only a cloven hoof, the camel, the hare, the bunny, in other words, the rabbit, and the rock badger. Well, they chew the cud. You can watch the bunny, right? Yeah, 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 yeah. What's up, Doc? Yeah, they chew cud. But they do not have a cloven hoof. They are not food. They are not clean. The swine is unique. The Bible mentions this. The sages will point out that the swine is the only animal, really. By that, they mean the swine, the boar, the porcine family, is the only animal that has a cloven hoof, but in fact does not chew the cud. So the Midrash essentially says, I find this to be an interesting observation, that as a result he is particularly detestable because he looks like he might be food, but he's a wily fellow, deceptive little beast. You might eat him by accident thinking he was food, but he's not. Okay, he is unclean. Their flesh you shall not eat, nor their carcasses shall you touch. Now that's interesting because essentially, a carcass of a pig is the only one that it says explicitly, that's so bad, you don't even touch the carcasses. Now, what does that say about pig skins? Oh, well. All right. Or how about, ready for this? I remember seeing this and thinking, you've got to be kidding me. A Bible that is leather bound with pig skin. How's that for a holy book? Holy, untouchable. And I guess that describes a lot of Christian attitudes towards the Bible, if you think about it. Huh. Okay. These you may eat of the things that swim in the waters, whatever has fins and scales. Again, same thing. It's an and concept. It's got to have both. One or the other, not sufficient. Both got to have, then it's food. Whatever does not have fins and scales, you are not to eat. It is unclean. It's not food. All the clean birds you may eat of. But now we're going to get a list. We don't have a general rule in the case of the birds. Here are things you're not to eat. The great vulture, the bearded vulture, the osprey, the gleed, the falcon, the kite after its kind, ravens of all kinds, the ostrich, and that one bummed me out when I realized that ostriches were not food, the nighthawk, the sea mew, the hawk after its kinds, little owl, great owl, horned owl. Okay, so far what we're talking about are either carrion birds or essentially hunting birds, birds of prey, falcons, owls, vultures, and so forth. The pelican, the carrion vulture, the cormorant, the stork, the heron, the hoopoe, and the bat. The bat, of course, is, according to modern science, is not a not a bird at all, but it does fly, and it doesn't chew the cud, and doesn't have... Well, anyway, it's an unclean thing for sure. Rats with wings is another way to describe it. All the wing-swarming things are unclean to you. They shall not be eaten. All the winged clean things you may eat of those things. Now, it's going to describe what that means here. You're not to eat anything that dies of itself. You can give it to the stranger that's within your gates. In other words, the roadkill. He can eat it, or you can sell it to a foreigner. But you are set apart people unto Yehoyarel. Do not seethe a kid in its mother's milk. That one's kind of fascinating. What the heck is that? Now, this is the one, if you've never heard it, the rabbis will claim this is the one that says you got to separate milk and dairy from meat products. And honestly, I've heard the explanation for where they get that. It never made sense to me. Never resonated. I never actually thought it sounded like it was real scripture. If somebody is convinced that it is, in fact, the commandment, fine. I'm not. And I remember that whenever Abraham had the visitors come, remember what he did? He got him a goat and some milk and cheese. And Abraham seemed to have a pretty good handle on a lot of the Torah otherwise, even though it hadn't been written down yet. You shall surely tithe all the increase of your seed, which is brought forth in the field year by year, and you shall eat before Yehoyarel in the place which he chooses to put his name to dwell there, the tithe of your corn, your wine, your oil, the firstlings of your herd and your flock, so that you may learn to fear Yehoyarel always. And if it's too far for you, the way that you have to go, so that you can't carry it that far because it's too far away, well then, Yehoyarel, well, the place where he chooses to put his name, when he is going to bless you, then here's what you do. Now this is an interesting process. Okay, it's a long ways away. You can't carry the animals that far. So what you do is you sell them. You turn the animals into silver. So you swap them for silver. Now you bind up that silver in your hand, and now you go to the place where Yehoyarel is choosing, and you do there what you would have done with the animal. You buy something different, and now you can buy whatever you want, whatever your soul desires, it says. You can trade that money, that silver, for oxen, for sheep, for wine, for strong drink. Not if you're a Baptist. Doesn't matter what the Bible says. Baptist says you can't have strong drink. Bible says you can. Or for whatever your soul asks of you. You can eat it there before Yehoyarel, and you shall rejoice. Samach, Sameach. Hag Sameach. Have a good time. Rejoice before you, before your El, you and your household. Now the Levite that's within your gate, don't forget him, don't forsake him. He has no portion nor inheritance with you. At the end of every 3 years, even in the same year, you bring forth all the tithe of your increase, you lay it up within your gates, and that Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance with you, and a stranger, and the fatherless and the widow, those that are within your gates, shall come. And they shall eat and be satisfied, that Yehoyarel may bless you in the work, all the work of your hand, which you do. Now, at the end of every 7 years, you make a release. And this is the manner of the release. Now, this, by the way, is the seven-year release. We've talked about it, the Yovel year. Every creditor shall release that which he's lent unto his neighbor, doesn't exact it of his neighbor, his brother, because Yahuwah's release has been proclaimed. Of a foreigner, you can exact it. But whatever is with your brother in his hand, you shall release. Howbeit, there shall be no needy among you, for Yahuwah will surely bless you in the land which Yahuwah gives you to possess, if, though, only you diligently hearken unto the voice of Yahuwah to observe to do all this commandment which I command you today. Because Yahuwah will, in fact, bless you as he's promised you. And you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. You'll rule over many nations, but they shall not rule over you. These promises we're going to see again. If there is among you a needy man, one of your brethren, within any of your gates, in the land which he gives you, do not harden your heart, nor shut your hand from your needy brother, but you will open your hand unto him, and lend him sufficient for his need, that which he is in want of. Do not allow a base thought to enter your heart. You might even say, take every thought captive, saying, hey, you know what? This seventh year, this year of release is at hand. Uh-oh, I ain't going to get it back. And as a result, your eye might be evil against your needy brother, and you don't give him anything. And he cries out to Yahuwah against you, and that will be sin in you. You shall in fact surely give him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you do, when you give unto him, because it is this thing that Yahuwah has commanded, and he will bless you in all your work, in all that you put your hand to. He is the one that you are in fact lending to. He will in fact be the one that takes care of the problem and blesses you. The poor, it says, shall never cease out of the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall surely open your hand unto your poor and needy brother in the land. Does that mean we don't have to do it since we're not in the land? I gave it the office? Interesting. It's funny to me how many people say, oh, you have to do this part, but you don't have to do the other parts. We don't care about the paganism. You can have your bunnies and eggs, but make sure you give, right? Give your tithes to when the offering plate comes around, make sure you put your 10% in there. If your brother, an Ivri, a Hebrew, or a Hebrew man or woman, is sold unto you, he serves, we know this, for 6 years. Seventh year, you let him go for free, for nothing. He's paid his debt to you. Now, when you let him go free from you, you are not to let him go empty-handed. This is interesting. You are to furnish him liberally out of your flock, out of your threshing floor, out of your wine press. Of that which Yahuwah, your El, has blessed you with, you, in fact, now give unto him. And you remember, you too were once a bondman in the land of Egypt, and Yahuwah redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this thing this day. Shall be, if he says unto you, I won't go out from you, because he loves you and your house, and he has fared well with you, then you take an awl. Now, we've heard this before, and I'm going to suggest to you that there's a midrash here. I'll go through the process, and then we'll talk about the midrash. It's always been kind of interesting because we read this and we think, oh, he loves you. This is really good. Or is it? Anyway, you shall take an awl, thrust it through his ear into the doorpost, and then he shall be your bondman forever. And you also can do likewise to your bondwoman. Now, let's pause. Okay, the midrash I find fascinating. The midrash says the point of Hebrew bond service is to teach this person, this man, to be a free, upstanding citizen, how to live free in the land. And if, in fact, because that's why he was in trouble to begin with, that's how he probably ended up in your service. Your job is to teach him Torah, in other words. So what the midrash says is, if he decides that he wants to stay a slave forever, you failed. You didn't do the job of teaching him how to live free. I've always found that kind of interesting. All right, I will consider this to be a double-edged sword. I like the idea that, yes, he loves you and cares about you and wants to stay. But I think, you know, you hear all these, the leftists will say, oh, you love this bird, you got to set him free. Well, folks, that ought to apply to people, if you think about it. Okay? Back to this idea of joy, though, when you're getting ready to release this individual who's served. It shall not seem hard unto you when you let him go free from you, for to the double of the hire of the hireling he served you for 6 years. And Yahuwah will bless you in all that you do. So if you do right, you bless him when he leaves, you will in fact be blessed. All the firstling males that are born of your herd and of your flock you shall set apart unto Yahuwah. You shall do no work with the firstling of your ox, nor the firstling of your flock. You shall eat it before Yahuwah your El year by year in the place which he chooses, you and your house. And if there's any blemish or lameness or blindness there, you shall not sacrifice that one unto Yahuwah your El. You shall eat it within your gates. The clean and the unclean alike may eat it, as the gazelle in the hart. Only, hey, here it is again. Remember what he's going to say? You shall not eat the blood. Pour it on the ground as if it was water. Again, this is a long portion. And what's fascinating is that it pretty well hits so many of the high points that the whole church hates. Including, and this is how it's going to end, chapter 16 is going to give us one more reprise of all those days that the whole church will say, these are Jewish feasts. Answer, no. They are not Jewish feast. Yah calls them his feast. These are my feast, my appointed times, he says. And notice what it says here. By the way, it's a commandment. Observe the month of Abib and keep the Pesach unto Yahuwah, your El. Because in the month of Abib, Yahuwah your El brought you forth out of Egypt by night. And you shall not sacrifice the Passover offering unto Yahuwah your El out of the flock and the herd. And you shall sacrifice the Pesach offering unto Yahuwah out of the flock and the herd in the place which Yahuwah shall cause his name to dwell there. You're to eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days you eat unleavened bread, even the bread of affliction, because, remember, in haste you came out of the land of Egypt, so that you may remember, Zakar, the day when you did, when you came forth out of the land of Egypt, all the days of your life. There shall be no leaven seen with you in all your borders for 7 days, nor shall any of the flesh which you sacrifice in the first day at evening remain all night until the morning. You may not sacrifice the Passover offering within any of your gates which Yahuwah your El gives you, but only at the place which Yahuwah shall cause his name to dwell. You shall sacrifice the Pesach offering at evening, at the going down of the sun, at the season which you came forth out of Egypt. Now wait a second, let me ask a question. Scripture is silent on this, but I think we can come up with an answer. It's not that hard. The place which he has told us to do this does not exist anymore. It's gone, taken away for cause. So we cannot sacrifice the Pesach offering. But on the other hand, he told us to do this, to keep it, to Zakar it, to remember it throughout your generations in all your dwelling places as a feast forever. Huh, which is it? Answer. Well, we're still covered by the forever part, right? All of our dwelling places, even if we're not dwelling in the land. I will suggest that what we cannot do is we cannot make this so-called a sacrifice, but we can certainly memorialize, remember the things he's telling us we are to remember for, as he puts it here, all the days of your life. Okay? Roast it, knead it in a place which you or your else should choose. Can't do that. 6 days you'll eat unleavened bread. We can do that. And on the seventh day, it's a solemn assembly to Yahuwah your El. You shall do no work therein. We can certainly do that. 7 weeks from there, you shall number unto you. From the time your sickle is first put to the standing corn, you begin to number 7 weeks. And then you shall keep the feast of weeks unto Yahuwah your El, after the measure of the freewill offering of your hand, which you shall give, as Yahuwah blesses you. And you shall rejoice before Yahuwah your El, you, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, and the Levite that's within your gates, the stranger and the fatherless, the widow, all that are in the midst of you. Here it is again, in the place which Yahuwah your El shall cause his name to dwell there. We can't do it in the place. Can we rejoice? I think we can. Your mileage may vary. I don't command you to do it. I'm not saying that that's what you have to do. I'm just encouraging folks. Read what he says, understand it in context, and recognize that there are things he says don't do. I think that's pretty obvious. There are things he says do that are commandments, and then there are ways that we cannot do all of them, but there are certainly things that we still can. And if we want to be obedient, I can't see any reason why we shouldn't at least try. You shall keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Sukkot, that's the one coming up here in the fall. I skipped verse 12 by accident here. You shall remember, you were a bondman in Egypt. You shall observe and do all of these statutes, these hukim. You shall keep the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot, 7 days, after you've gathered in from your threshing floor and from your winepress. And you shall rejoice in your feast, you, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, and the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow that's within your gates. 7 days. You shall keep a feast unto Yahuwah your El in the place which Yahuwah your El shall choose, because Yahuwah your El shall bless you in all your increase and in all the work of your hands, and you shall be altogether joyful. So, we cannot do it in the place that he chooses. Now, matter of fact, the place that he did choose, if we remember where it was before it got taken away, was a long ways away anyway. Some of these things, as you note, are referred to as the Feast of Ascension. And they were the three times a year when all the males would go up. This is essentially describing that, although it does use different verbiage at this point. But just understand, folks, that even though we don't go to the place, and that place does not exist, nor is his name there in the same sense anymore, we can, in fact, memorialize it. And I like this part. We can, in fact, be altogether joyful. Three times in a year shall all the males appear before Yahuwah in the place which he shall choose, on the Feast of Unleavened Bread, on the Feast of Weeks, and on the Feast of Tabernacles. And they shall not appear before Yahuwah empty. In other words, not empty-handed. Every man shall give as he's able, according to the blessing of Yahuwah Yireh, which he gives you. And with that, folks, we come to the end of, a relatively lengthy Torah portion. And it's too long to summarize in any kind of a brief single sentence, other than to say what it certainly does is about as complete and concise and clear as you can get of a distinction between what the whole church says to do, because it doesn't care what he says to do, how many things have been replaced, added to and subtracted from, and over and over and over again he lays them out and says, keep, observe, do. Don't be doing the things that the gods that you have now replaced me with here in this land are telling you to do. Do it the way I say. And how far have we come, and how far is it that we need to return? And that's the key.